Sometimes you gotta think like a lady.
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 And act like a boss.
Welcome to Think Like a Lady. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThinkLikeALady_ or on Facebook at @ThinkLikeALadyPodcast, as well as on Instagram at @ThinkLikeALady_podcast. We're available to listen to on all the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just ask Amazon Alexa.
Hello, everyone. This is Afroz.
And this is Dua.
So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to identify toxic traits in men when you're, you know, whether you're on the dating scene, if you're just getting to know someone, but, you know, you have the serious intention of pursuing marriage. So, you know, just to kick off this episode, we can refer to this piece published by this blogger called How to Spot an F-Boy in 5 Easy Steps. So, number one, he doesn't directly ask for what he wants. Number two, the insistence that he's a nice guy. Or three, his inability to answer questions that you ask him directly. Four, he has expectations of you before getting to know you. Five, an inability to listen or understand. So Dua, do you have any thoughts on this?
Okay, well, hold on. Let me just fill everyone in. So I was previously married, and I'll tell you guys a little bit about how I met him. So we had been talking. It was very, very quick. And I've actually talked about this on the first episode that we did. We weren't talking for very long, and we knew each other for maybe like 3 months before we actually got married. We had met online, and we were writing back and forth. There were a number of things that, in hindsight, like now that it's all done and said and over with, I recognized these things that were clear red signs that I had ignored. And I think it's important to be able to share those things with you guys, because if I can prevent somebody from going through what I went through, then that would make me really happy. You mentioning like the emotional currency that they're willing to spend on you versus the emotional currency that you're willing to spend on them, but not just you're willing to spend on them, also how much they expect you to spend on them.
Yeah, right. So Dua and I had a conversation recently about how a lot of the men that we encounter will want your emotional energy when they're going through something. And then, you know, when the tables are turned, they somehow can't deliver. So do you want to elaborate on that?
With my previous husband, it was very much one-sided, I felt like, where there were situations where if he was upset about something, or he was, I don't know, emotional about something that happened or whatever, you know, I was supposed to be there for him. I was supposed to listen to him. I was supposed to, you know, I don't know, hold him or whatever. And then when it was my time to be really emotional, I mean, I can't say that he didn't listen to me. I mean, there were times that I would, you know, talk about my thoughts about maybe something that was happening at work, and he would listen to me. But I'm talking about when it really mattered, like when I'm crying based on, you know, something that's happened that is really emotionally stressful for me, he wasn't there for me at all. Most of the time, he actually was the reason why I was crying. So that one-sidedness of the emotional currency, I actually really like that word that you used. So if you coined that up, then good job.
Well, here's the reason why I coined it up, is because, you know, a lot of people don't think this way, and I implore that they do. There's many correct ways to assess anything, right? Any phenomenon.
Right.
And I view emotions as a finite resource that humans have to offer, you know? And so I view it as a currency. I'm sure most of you out there that are listening have felt at some point in your life that you've been emotionally depleted, like you have nothing left to give. It could be because you have a friend, let's say she keeps dating the same guy who keeps screwing her over, then she keeps coming back to you crying about her on and off boyfriend, and you're just like, okay, I'm over it. I have nothing more to say to you. Mm. you've ever been through that? Yeah. You're emotionally depleted. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You have run out.
And there are people, isn't it? It's like there are givers and there are takers, right? I'm sure a lot of people who, you know, try to find out about their own personality, they've come across that and they've read about it. But it's like a normal balance would be that you give sometimes and you take sometimes. That's a normal balance, right? But a lot of the times in relationships, what ends up happening is that one person becomes, you know, a habitual giver and mm-hmm. one person becomes a habitual taker. And then in that relationship, what will happen is it becomes very toxic for the giver because their energy is being constantly depleted. I mean, this isn't good for anyone. It's not good for your health. It's not good for your mental stability. It's not good for anything.
If you're spending your emotional currency on someone who's emotionally bankrupt, you're going to be emotionally in debt, is how I view things. Because even emotionally, you should have a return on your investment, should you not?
I fucking love this. This is great. That is wonderful. I wish I thought like this when I was in my early 20s. Like, I want a return on my investment, man.
Right. Because you don't have that much heart to give if it's you're not getting anything out of it, in my opinion. I mean, it says good about a single individual if they do have the ability to do that, you know? But there's a limit, in my opinion.
I mean, there are so many ways to, you know, some people can agree, some people can disagree. I don't know. I mean, there's also then there's a social perspective, there's the religious perspective, and then there's the cultural perspective. You know, the cultural perspective, I think for a lot of cultures would be, no, it's the woman's responsibility to be there for the man regardless. But then they don't even take into consideration the man's responsibility to be there emotionally for the woman as well.
So, you know, I think there's a tendency in general of women, and you know, psychologists have proved this, is that women tend to be much more emotionally giving. Generally, I'm not saying this is true for everyone. Generally, women are much more emotionally giving than men are. I don't think this has anything to do with inherent biology or female psychology or what have you, because yes, these were psychologists that you know, came to this conclusion. But what they said was, is that these are social reactions to, you know, these are social stimuli to what has been programmed into you. So, for example, what I mean by that is when, you know, boys are growing up, they're telling them to man up and don't cry and don't be a wuss, whatever. And women aren't told that, right? So they're kind of taught to be emotionally suppressed. And that carries with them into their adulthood. So in a previous podcast, I mentioned that there is a higher rate of men committing suicide disproportionately than women. A lot of scientists have evaluated as to why this is. People blame it directly on culture, just culture everywhere across the world. This is the problem. You know, it's one thing where it's like women were seen as more emotional. Really, we're not more emotional than men, in my opinion, from, you know, the studies that I've read. I believe is that we actually go about it in a much healthier way. You know, when we go through something, we'll talk to our therapist, we'll talk to our girlfriends and eat ice cream over it, and we'll share ideas and be emotionally supportive for one another. Men don't do that. They just suck it up. And then, you know, that's why you have a high statistic of the demographic of men from ages 45 to 60 committing suicide by a disproportionate margin compared to women, is when they experience a depression so bad, they actually feel that, you know, they feel so trapped that they see suicide as the outlet.
Keeping that in mind, I think that, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, you're looking for someone that you want to settle down with. You know, when you're looking for that person, you end up overlooking a lot of things because, you know,
you end up overlooking whether or not they're emotionally available or if they're emotionally bankrupt.
That's perfect. I think that that's like number one thing. But not only that, I kind of want to touch on the things that I've got five things that were looking back on, you know, what I went through, five things that I wish I knew, but also I wish I had been told to look out for these things prior to going through what I went through, because had I been told these things, I would have absolutely absolutely kept an eye out for them, and I would have recognized right away. I came across this post the other day, and it was basically like, the things that you ignore when you're getting to know somebody, like because you think, oh, it'll be fixed later, are the things that end up causing you to get divorced.
That's a really great point.
The things that come up in the beginning that you're like, I don't know if this is gonna work, you kind of doubt it, and it's this feeling in your stomach that you're just like, I don't know if I'm okay with that, and you ignore it. Those are the things that later on they come up, and yeah, it's the reason why it doesn't end up working out. And I've personally experienced this as well.
What's like an example? What's like a red flag that you saw prior to marrying him where you thought, okay, I'll address it later?
Okay, yeah. I mean, well, let's get into it because I can give a couple of examples. So, okay, number one, right? And we can discuss these as we go through them. I've got five things. So the first one is they are judging your past. I think that that's huge. If somebody is asking you questions that are making you really uncomfortable, that's not okay. If they're constantly asking you, there's a difference to be like, you know, oh, so, you know, if you, let's say, for example, you were previously divorced, right? If they want to know about that, why didn't it work out? Yeah, they have the right to ask that. Now, if they start asking really, really intimate details, like, you know, things that are making you feel uncomfortable about your marriage, they don't have the right to be asking those things. They don't have the right to be asking you anything about something that's making you uncomfortable. They don't have the right to be asking you about any sins that you did in your past. They don't have the right to be bringing any of these things up. So the moment that they're making you really uncomfortable, and if your response is, listen, you know, I'm not really comfortable talking about that right now, and if their response is, I have the right to know, then yeah, that's a huge red flag. And the reason for that being is that if they're treating you this way prior to you guys even being married or together, how aggressive do you think that they're going to be to want to know everything when you are together? That's not to say that, you know, you should be hiding anything from somebody that you're in a marriage with, but my point is that if they're making you feel like they're judging you about the things that you did in your past, maybe when you were not really religious, maybe when you were young and you didn't understand the implications of your decisions, maybe when you were, you know, maybe you just made a wrong choice, like maybe you knew the implications and you just, you know, you weren't in the right, I don't know, state of mind, you just made the wrong choice. And if they're judging you on that and they're making you feel like they're judging you on that, that's a red flag. That's not okay. You don't have to justify your past to them. You don't have to justify your past to anyone. And Afroz has said before in our last episode, she mentioned, I think it was the last episode, I don't know, in one of the previous episodes, she's mentioned that the only time that you can be judged, I mean, the only time that, you know, you can hide all of your sins, you can hold in all of your sins, you don't have to reveal them to anyone. That's our right. The only time that you have to bring it up to somebody is if it impedes on, you know, them personally, like it's, you know, it could affect them directly, either whether it's physically or mentally, right? But what's happened to you in your past, there is no way, shape, or form that that affects them now, because they weren't around for that, right? That it can't affect them mentally or physically because they weren't present when it happened. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
My point is that if this person is judging you, right, they're making you feel judged, and you're thinking, you're trying to justify it by telling yourself, okay, I really don't like the way he's making me feel, by the way he's talking to me, but, you know, maybe he has the right to know, like, maybe he's right, maybe I should tell him, like, he has the right to know about the things I've done in my past. That's actually not true. That's not true. He doesn't really have that right. He doesn't have the right to be questioning you about the sins that you've done in your past at all. And so, again, if he's making you feel uncomfortable with this, that is a red flag, and that means that when you guys are actually together or actually married, he's going to be, it's a possibility he's going to be throwing it in your face. Oh, well, you did this, or you used to do those things. And I heard it in my marriage.
For sure. Like, so if you have something in your past that's, you know, doesn't impede on the livelihood of anybody else, is not something that could affect the person that you're dating now or will end up marrying, you just have to be careful what you reveal to your next prospect, because you don't want it being weaponized against you. And that's kind of a red flag in and of itself, because if you see that your partner has the ability, or that, not the ability, the tendency to weaponize something that is inherently irrelevant to the relationship against you, that will show you that he's not an objective person. He's not a person about right or wrong. He is a person about being right himself.
And I'll just tell you from firsthand experience, being with somebody like that is so difficult. It's draining. It's they're constantly right and you're constantly wrong. It's very, very difficult. Anything that you do, they'll throw your past in your face. I don't wish it on anyone. It's very difficult. So my advice to the ladies out there who are currently searching for someone, that is a red flag. If they're making you feel uncomfortable and it's a gut feeling inside of you and you've told them like, I don't want to talk about this now, and they're not respecting it, major red flag. And I would say just on to the next. There's like 7 billion people on this planet. Like, you'll find someone, I promise you. Okay. Number two, how they treat their parents, how they treat their sisters and their mothers. And the reason why that's important is because the way that they treat their mother is a very, very good implication of how they're going to treat their wife. So do they respect her? Are they speaking to her with kindness? Are they, you know, going to serve her? You know, because obviously we're all adults here, which means that our parents are, you know, elderly or becoming elderly, right? And so, is this guy serving his mother, or is he laying on the couch with his hookah waiting for mom to come serve him his chai? So it's like, if he expects that from his own mother, who is an elderly woman, what do you think he expects from you as his young wife? And by young, I don't mean like young as in age. I mean just young in comparison to the elderly. You know, that's really important. Not only is he going to be treating you, and then continuing that cyclical effect of making a woman feel like her primary goals in this life are to be in the kitchen. This is a really big red flag. I mean, if this is something that you personally are okay with, I mean, by all means, that's not to diminish any woman who wants to do that. But I've been there. It's not fun. It's not nice. I don't wish it on anyone.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's women who choose to, you know, be homemakers, and that's fine. That's your own will. But there's a difference between that expectation being put on you by a man. That is the problem. That's the red flag. If you as a woman desire to be a homemaker, right? It should be in its entirety your own choice, your own will, without influence, without pressure from anybody. But as soon as a man puts that on you, then it's a red flag.
No, but this isn't even about being a homemaker or not being a homemaker. It's like, you can be a homemaker, and let's say you're a homemaker, right? But it's like, you're gonna have, as women, it's like we have times of the month where we don't feel good, right? And so it's like, during that time that you're not feeling good, is he coming in? Is he stepping in? Is he making the dinner? Is he taking care of the kids? Or is he like, where's my tea? Where's my food? Why haven't you cooked this? Where's the salt?
Right,
those are two completely, it's not about being a homemaker. It's about, is he being aggressively demanding with you? With no regard to, you know, your situation or your, does that make any sense?
Well, I think both are true. No, for sure. Both are true. Like, he shouldn't have the expectation of you being a homemaker ever, unless you want to do it yourself. And, you know, if you're a career woman or a homemaker or whatever you want to be, the fact that, you know, you're someone who could potentially bear his children, or, you know, if you choose not to bear it, whatever, up to you. If there's no sympathy, and you having this lived experience of a female where the world is wildly more unfair to you than it'll ever be to him, if there's that complete lack of empathy, then that's a red flag.
Exactly. So like I said, emphasizing that, you know, before you end up jumping into marriage with this person, definitely have the opportunity to genuinely observe the type of relationship that he has with his mother. Because I'll tell you right now that if he cusses towards his mother, if he's disrespectful, if he's yelling at her, if he's expecting her to be his servant and serve him, and that is not a guy that you want to spend the rest of your life with. I'm telling you that from personal experience. Additionally, if you haven't had the time to observe this, I would say go out of your way to make that time. And if he's got any sisters, also take a look at how he treats his sisters. Siblings are a little different, because obviously as siblings we fight with our siblings. So I think mother is the main one, but take a look at the relationship that he has with the girls in his life. You know, like I said, is he expecting them to serve his every whim, or does he have a more friendly relationship with them? You know, these are really important things that are going to give you a very clear indication of how he's going to treat you and how he's going to treat your daughters if you guys have any. So there's that. Number three, advice that I wish that I got is, anger. That is huge. That is so big. There was an incident before we got married when we were still like talking. This was even actually before we even decided to like progress things. Like we hadn't even really confirmed that we would like be moving forward to like getting married. So we were still in like that, well, 3 months is all initial stages, but whatever, right? And so there was a conversation we were having. He was again going back to number one. He was aggressively asking me things about my past that in the beginning it was, you know, kind of friendly questions, but then it like rapidly got very aggressive and he just wanted more information. And I remember I was very uncomfortable answering him because I didn't even understand why he was asking me these questions. And he wasn't taking like, you know, I don't really want to have this conversation right now. He wasn't taking that as an answer. And so I ended up answering him, and he disagreed or he disliked my answer and got extremely aggressive about it and just starts like putting me down. And I don't know, huge red flag. Looking back on it, it's like, man, I mean, I have no idea what I was thinking to like move forward with this guy.
Right.
But it wasn't aggressive like when we got married. I mean, when we got married, that it was like top of his lungs screaming. So it obviously wasn't like full blown, but it was that like a snippet. It was like he gave me a snippet of what I was gonna be dealing with later on. You know, you'll know if you're being put in this situation because you'll feel like you're being attacked, right? It's like, that's the only description I can give. You feel like you're being attacked. Whether they're raising their voice or not, you still feel like you're being attacked based on their tone of voice and the way that they're asking the questions. After that had happened, I then, like an idiot, you make excuses for this person. Even though I knew it made me uncomfortable, I wasn't okay with it, I completely, ding, 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 ignored the things that I didn't like in the beginning, which ultimately led to us getting a divorce, right? But I ignored that. And I shouldn't have. It was a red flag and I completely ignored it. And I think it's really important for us as women to not ignore those gut feelings and those things that make us uncomfortable in the beginning because they're definitely going to come up again. That's for sure. So
right.
Take a look at how he deals with things when he is upset. Obviously, if you're not engaged to this person long enough to see what they're like when they're angry, then you better hold off on that marriage and wait until you do see what they're like when they're angry, because being married to somebody who is, when they're angry, they are aggressive, they're violent. When they are this way, when they have those characteristical traits, your life's not going to be easy. Your marriage is not going to be easy. Wait until you have the opportunity to see them go through something difficult. Good indicators of what somebody's personality is like is if you witness them experience grief, if you witness them experience some sort of loss, like financially, if you witness them go through just anything difficult, losing a job.
Right. No, that's a really great example, because I've seen men when, you know, if they've lost their jobs or they're going through a divorce or a custody battle, what have you.
Their whole personality changes.
But on the flip side, I have one family member in particular that I think of. He was going through a divorce with his wife and, you know, the custody of their daughter. And he was so graceful throughout the entire process.
Yeah. And humble. Very humble.
And alhamdulillah, like, you know, when I watched him go through it, I was like, wow. And, you know, they're still friends till this day, even though they're divorced. It's funny because when I saw him go through that and the amount of grace and humility that he had, and he even had humility in understanding why the divorce was happening from her perspective. usually the men are pretty bitter. They feel like, ugh, child support, this blood-sucking thing I have to go through.
Let's just be real for a second. I mean, it's not a common trait you're going to come across. So I think having that expectation is pretty high, if that makes any sense. So you don't have mm-hmm. to have that high of an expectation in terms of, you know, somebody's emotional intelligence or emotional control, I guess. But what is important is that, you know, they can get angry. That's okay. But how do they get angry? Do they take that anger out on you? Are they taking the anger out on their religion, like on God? Are they stopping to pray? Are they, you know what I mean? It's like, how are they dealing with it? Are they getting violent, or are they mad like anybody else would be, and they're trying their best to like not freak out? You know, maybe they want to vent to you a little bit, but they're not taking their anger out on you. Maybe they want to, you know, go be alone,
right? Or they're not like easily triggered. I'll give you an example, and I feel like this example isn't just limited to just, you know, relationships, but like maybe friendships as well, business partners, what have you, anybody. If you've ever been on a road trip with your friends, that is the ultimate test of friendship, in my opinion, because, you know, that's when you're in a small, tight space and you'll probably end up pissing each other off in like the smallest of ways. You know, somebody ate all the trail mix and you feel like, oh, I didn't get any or something like that. You know, you're easily triggered by the most trivial things, right? But you know that you're friends with this person, so you show some impulse control. You have control over your emotions. Sometimes, Dua and I, we do this podcast together. You know, we live in different time zones. We don't always match up, and we're always like, you know, disagreeing about ideas. But we do it mm-hmm. in the most endearing way when it comes to disagreements. And I expect the same in a relationship as well, right? I mean, if you're going to be living with a person and, you know, you're going to have conflicts, you know, you're going to have conflicts like, hey, you didn't wash the dishes. At least you could have mm-hmm. ran the dishwasher or something like that. Or like, you know, when you do the laundry, can you please separate
right.
my whites out or something like that? Right. And if you see someone not exhibiting impulse control of how annoyed they are with you, that's a red flag, because you shouldn't be so easily triggered by some of the most common occurrences in life that are often very, very trivial.
I completely agree. And exactly, small things. You know, if they're arguing with you about, you know, like how much salt you put on the food, it's like...
I feel like this actually that's gonna happened.
Think about it. Just think about it. Think about listening to those petty little things for the next 50 years of your life. Just, I mean, or 70 or however long you guys end up living, right? It's like, do you really want that? Do you? I mean, I don't know. I fucking don't. Do you want it?
Well, think of it this way. If you're in the relationship, I can see why it's hard to be introspective. So you got to be retrospective. Step out of your relationship. Pretend you're a third person looking in. And you see a couple arguing about salt. Too much salt on the chicken. And you're going to be like, this is the dumbest argument I've ever heard, right? If you're a third person listening to an argument like that. But when you're in the relationship, the argument doesn't sound stupid. Because you know why it doesn't sound stupid? Because you're not actually arguing about the chicken.
Dude, I disagree with you. While I was in these arguments, I was thinking in my head, like, this is so stupid. And I would tell him this. Like, this is the stupidest thing ever. Why are you arguing with me about this?
Well, because you're more retrospective than he is. But generally, that's what I'm imploring people to do. When you're retrospective, you can kind of... You can feel it that the argument is really stupid.
Dude, you're right. It's like it's sometimes it's not even about the chicken. It's about something that happened like a week ago that no one talked about or whatever.
Right. It's something much bigger and it's lying beneath the surface. It's like the argument is actually about torn tensions in the relationship, about, you know, feelings of mistrust, feelings of disrespect, all of these things. But it's manifesting itself in these tiny little arguments. So that's what I'm saying. The argument isn't actually about the chicken. We should put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it's not about the chicken. I like that. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So getting angry, how they get angry, keep an eye out on this. This is red flags, because not only are they going to be taking out their anger on you in this manner, or probably worse, right? Because when you're getting to know someone, they hold in a lot of what they normally do, right? They act better than they are, right? They want to flatter you. They want to whatever. They want to, I don't know. And so
they're fronting.
Exactly. They're fronting. So keep in mind that whatever you see, it's probably 10 times worse than that when they're comfortable with you, right?
You know what I call that? I call that the first impression game. In my family, that's what we call that. That phase in the beginning where it's like the first 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
It's called the first impression.
I think it's longer than that, actually.
You think so?
In the online dating world, yes, because you don't see this person so often. In real life, yeah, I think 3 months, 4 months, I think that's reasonable. But if you're seeing them regularly, you know, like you can actually watch their behavioral characteristics. When it's online and like there's this filter, this screen filter, no, it's much, much longer than that.
You know, this is a bit of a tangent, but it's still relevant. I hate it. And, you know, a lot of people may disagree with me. Being Pakistani, and maybe it's not a Pakistani thing, I think it's a Muslim thing. Actually, it is a Muslim thing. A lot of the times when two people get married, the families are involved from the beginning. And the children have less of a say in their own procedural marriage prospects. And the families are the ones talking to each other, doing the negotiations. And the reason why I object to that happening too fast is because that kind of facilitates the first impression thing.
Yeah, it's almost like, okay, well, I know I'll be marrying her in a few months, so I just have to act this way until we're married.
Right. And the family puts on a front too, you know what I mean?
So, oh man, yes, yes. I had a direct, sorry, I'm just going to say one thing and then you can continue. But ahead. I had a direct conversation with one of the sisters and I said, listen, from a female to a female, I am asking you, are there things about your brother that I should know about? And she looked me in the eyes and she straight up said no. And she was a liar. Just want to say that. Continue.
I love that. But yes, so that's why I implore... I'm going to piss off a lot of Muslims, but I do think there should be a dating period before families get introduced. If you're in a unique circumstance, you can assess it case by case. But generally, if it's just like just two people meeting, get to know them long enough where you both get comfortable with each other, where your guard starts to kind of is weakened. You know what I mean? And you're comfortable enough with each other where, you know, there's some questionable things about both of you, but no one is being judged, right? Because your family won't be that way towards your significant other. They're going to be analyzing and being analytical for every little thing. If you introduce them way too early.
But that's, I mean, honestly, I don't really know about my opinion on that. It's like, from an Islamic perspective, it's like, I agree.
I'm just talking about there is that first impression game aspect though, right? It's just like, how can you expect your family to get a fair assessment of your significant other and his family if everyone's in there? Each other's business in the beginning, because there's going to be serious fronting going.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, I'm just being realistic here. Like, fine, like we can talk about it Islamically, but you can't dismiss that's the
for
phenomenon
sure,
that
for
will
sure
take
yeah
place.
I agree. I do agree with there's this fakeness that goes on. So if you've been with this person or you've been talking to this person mm-hmm. or whatever for a certain amount of time and you haven't seen that mm-hmm. you haven't seen them get angry ever, you haven't seen them deal with something difficult, I mean, I would at least wait until you've seen it and to be able to have a good assessment of their personality when they're angry, because like I said, you better believe that they're going to be a million times worse than that, and not a million, but like maybe, you know, 5 to 10 times worse than that when they are comfortable with you and they are angry, if that makes any sense. Not necessarily towards you, but just like in general, you know. Okay, so that's number three. Number four is, I love this one. This person is always talking about how they are such a good person. So you were quoting this from the thing that you said from the beginning, but let me ask you a question, Afroz. Any person that you've ever met in your entire life that you consider to be a good, quote unquote, good person, did they ever talk about how they were a good person, or were they just a good person?
No, they never talk about whether or not they're a good person. And it's weird because I've been on dates with those dudes who say, I'm a good person. I'm a good guy. And I'm just... Like, why?
Yeah, like constantly.
Why are you shoving that in my face? Have you been accused of not being a good guy? Like, I'm so confused here.
Exactly. What's your criminal background record look like?
Can I have your license plate number? Like,
what's I'm gonna look your name up on that the sex offender list. No, but seriously though, like, honestly, I'm not joking. I don't know a single person. Just thinking about the people I've met, some of the most amazing people that I've met in my life, it's like it wasn't even something that was brought up. They don't even talk about themselves, like, ever. But then you've got these people who are constantly like, oh, I give sadaqah and I did this and I'm such a good person and my mother is such a good, and my sisters are such good people, and my everything is amazing and I am fucking perfect. It's like, dude.
Well, I want to draw a distinction. There's sometimes things are conversationally brought up, right? I don't see those as red flags. Like, for example, if it's conversationally brought up, where if someone says to me,
how do you conversationally bring up, like, I am an amazing person? No. Maybe.
Let's say you're at the mosque and someone comes up to you and says, do you know where's the sadaqah box? Where can I find that? That's...
No. That's different. No, right, no, you're talking about something completely different.
Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you can get... If you want to assess if someone is actually a good person, see it in the conversations. Don't see it in the initiation.
I disagree completely. You do not see it in the conversations. You see it in their actions. If somebody is a good person, you see it in their actions, period. Okay.
Well, you know, going to the sadaqah box is the action. But
exactly. Going to the sadaqah box is the action. Putting money in the sadaqah box is the action. But then if the following action is like, oh, did you see me put I put $20 in the sadaqah box, then okay, like that retracted that retracted the first act. You know what I mean? It's like I lived through this as well. This is my five list, right? The five list of things to look out for that I personally experienced. So of course I obviously experienced this as well, constantly having to listen to how he was such a good person. Anything that he did that was good, if he gave like a homeless person a quarter on the side of the road, then he would be like boasting about it for like a week, you know, like, but I give charity. And it's just like, okay, man, like, good for you. Alhamdulillah. Like, may Allah reward you. And that's not, I'm not saying that in a sarcastic way, because I think everybody who gives sadaqah in any way, shape, or form should be rewarded for that. But also from an Islamic perspective, if you should give charity where your left hand doesn't even know what your right hand is given, which means that you're not talking about it. You're not boasting about it. You're not blowing your own trumpet. And people who do that typically are the exact opposite of it. It's like they want, it's like a psychological, it's like they want acceptance so badly. It's a lack of confidence thing is what it is from my, you know, psychology background. It's typically a lack of confidence. They want the people around them to think that they're so amazing and think so highly of them that they compensate that lack of confidence by constantly talking about how amazing they are and how amazing their family members are. I mean, he was constantly talking about how amazing his family members are. And I mean, I no comment is what I have to say about that.
I want to pivot off of what you said of people who consistently talk about what charity they do. I think another red flag is if they've ever done you a favor and they constantly remind you of it, or they hold it over your head.
If I had a trumpet in my mouth, I would play a song, because that was like on the money. I love it.
You know what I mean? Like, it could have been a small favor. It could have been a big favor.
You better believe that shit is going to follow you to your grave.
So, you know, it's when you start counting, and you know, that puts you in a weird position too, because what happens, the dynamic forces you to then talk about the things you've done for them so they don't overlook you, right? And you don't want to be in that position. And your intention usually would be, not because you want to toot your own horn, look at the things I've done for you, but rather to prove the point, look, we've both done things for each other. Why are we counting favors? But then you end up in like this cyclical feed forward loop of both of you doing it, where it becomes frustrating. And just counting favors is not a good thing for anybody.
But the problem with that type of a, you know, behavioral characteristic is that they don't understand that certain things are just normal and you don't need to be boasting about it. And again, it falls back on lack of confidence, needing appreciation, needing constant constant appreciation. And to be honest with you, sometimes it can be correlated with like a mental illness or, you know, a mental health issue. You know, I've been in situations where it got thrown in my face that this person purchased me a candy bar like 3 weeks later. And it's just like,
it's just,
you know,
candy bar.
No comment. Like, fucking no comment. Like, I just don't even, it's like, what? Like, am I supposed to be praising you for like spending 50 cents? Like, I don't understand. Is this not normal? Like, should you not just be doing these things for your wife and then not being like, but I bought you a candy bar? It's like, keep your fucking candy bar, man.
And you know, and if you end up doing that, if you're the type of person who does hold favors people over people's heads, you're putting people in a position where they no longer want a favor from you. Like, you're right.
It's like, keep it. I don't want it. And right. Then you're completely right, because then when anytime he would bring anything home for me, I would be like, I don't want it, because I knew it would be thrown in my face like 2 months
right.
later.
Right. And so it's like, what you're doing is that if you're trying to force someone to appreciate you by doing that, you're actually having the opposite effect. People don't actually want favors from you anymore. And, you know, when it's your family, don't expect thank yous in your family. I mean, do it. If you're a person, you should be the type of person that if it's my family and stuff, it's so casual that the word thank you isn't thrown anywhere. You should do it if you want to. If you want to say thank you, say thank you. But if it's your family, don't expect a thank you. It's your family. There's no counting favors here.
But I'll tell you something. Even if you thank them, it's not good enough. And then when you ask them what they want, it's like, I've already thanked you for that. Why are you bringing it up again? And then you ask them, what do you want? I've thanked you. What else do you want? Right? It's a difficult situation to be in when somebody's constantly throwing something on you. Like, you know, something small. Something that's just, it should just be normal. But even when it's not something small, even if it's something big, it's like, they shouldn't be throwing that on you, because if they had a problem doing it, then they shouldn't have done it in the first place.
But I just believe if you're going to do something for somebody, you know you're a good person if you're not expecting anything in return.
Agreed. Because obviously in the initial stages, it's hard to see if they're that way, right? If they're going to hold things against you, like, you don't know. But you can easily see it.
It's more formal in the beginning.
Yeah. Exactly. But you can easily see it through the way they're maybe talking about friends or family members. Like, if they seem like they're complaining a lot about certain things that they've done for other people and nobody appreciates it and this and that, it's like, that's a red flag. That's a really, really big red flag, you know, because like I said, being in a relationship with somebody who's constantly holding every single thing that they've ever done, I mean, including, you know, something just normal. Like, I drove you to work today. It's like, dude, we work right next to each other. Like, you didn't do me a favor. Like, you drove yourself from the house to your work, and I got out of your car parked at your work and walked to my work. So you didn't do me any favor. You just did what was like normal, like what you would have done regardless of whether I was there or not. And so it's like those things, think about it. Again, think about it. Think about having to deal with that constantly every day for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Do you want that?
No. No, I do not.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Number five. Culturally, Americans not just Americans, but some cultures, they tend to like beat around the bush. They're not very direct. They don't just come out and say things. They don't just come out and like ask questions. Like, if you want to ask somebody, it's like somebody something, you like overthink about how to ask them and like, you know, how not to offend them and all of this BS. Anyway, a lot of the times when you're in that initial courting phase of getting to know someone, you end up completely foregoing those questions because you don't want to offend this person. Like, detrimental questions. I'm not talking about like the getting to know you questions. I'm talking about the get like super detrimental questions. Like things that are super relevant to whether you're going to potentially be willing to spend the rest of your life with this person or not, if that makes any sense. Yeah, there's always the possibility that they're going to lie to you. I've been in that situation. I asked a lot of detrimental questions where had this person been honest with me about it, I would have been like, okay, well, you're not the one for me. Like, you know, moving on to the next. But unfortunately, you know, you may be in a situation where they're lying to you. And then, yeah, I mean, then the only thing that can help you make that decision is going to be istikhara and trusting in Allah to help you with that. But I think it's important to at least at the bare minimum, don't forego those questions. Don't think like, oh, he'll tell me later. I'll give you an example. One example is finances. Yeah. A lot of people are scared to ask like, how much money do you make? And a lot of people will think, oh, well, he'll share that with me if he wants to, or, you know, it's not really important, or how much money he makes. Let me just tell you a little something. I don't know if you know this. I've actually mentioned this. Actually, maybe you know this because I've mentioned it. The two reasons why people get divorced is because of children and because of money. Those are the two top reasons why people get divorced. And it's true. In regards to money, it's like, think about it. If you're constantly arguing about who spends money on what, where you spend your money, where's the money going? Do you have enough money? Can you pay the bills? It can be very stressful. So if you're in a situation where you don't want that to be, you know, you want somebody who's financially stable, right? You shouldn't be ashamed to ask that question. You shouldn't think to yourself like, oh, you know, I'm sure, you know, he says he's an engineer, so I'm sure he makes good money. Just because he's an engineer doesn't mean he's working. Like, what if he got laid off of a job? What if he, you know, is between jobs? What if he's, you know, just graduated? What if, you know? So it's like, you need to find out his, if that's a detrimental question to you, then you need to make sure you are transparent about it and you get an answer. Why is that important? Because after you've married him, if you find out that he's actually not working and you're the one who needs to be supporting him and yourself and the whole household, and, you know, that, I don't know. Is that what you want to do? Is that something you're going to be okay with? Would you have accepted to marry him if you knew that currently his financial situation is not okay? I don't know. I'm just giving you an example. This is an example of something, just for you guys to get an idea of what I'm talking about. But so don't be afraid to ask those like detrimental questions that are important mm-hmm. to you, and be transparent about them. And if he's not being, like I said, there's a possibility he could lie. But if his response is not transparency, if you see that there isn't transparency, if you see that his response is making you uncomfortable because you feel like he's like hiding something, obviously those are all red flags. So any thoughts on that?
I do have one thought, and I kind of want to pivot off of finances. I think another thing, which is generally in my opinion very hard to detect, is that if he's lying about his finances, let's say for instance he's not, and he's actually really rich, right? And I just say this to women, is that I always believe women should have their own pocketbook. The number one point of manipulation in any marriage is through finances. Let's say you married a guy who is financially well off and he can take care of you entirely. Mm-hmm. And if you have no ground beneath your feet and he's not treating you well, that's oftentimes why many women cite why they haven't left him yet, is because they have nowhere to go. Right? What will they do if they leave? Like, where will they live? Where will the kids live? All of these things. So, you know, it's a red flag when finances are being used as a point of manipulation. Let's say you're still in college, but you're married. Well, you know, you pissed me off. I'm not paying your tuition next month or like next semester. I'm not giving you your, I don't know, if you guys have like an allowance system, because in Islam, women are entitled to a certain portion of money. You know, if he's not giving that to you and he's holding that as some sort of ultimatum, then that's a red flag. Or if he's asking you to pay something back in like some weaselly way, like let's say like, you know, he paid for something that he should have paid for. Now he's just like, hey, I did this for you. I need you to pay for this. But it was never established, that exchange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you have to keep in mind that Islamically, it's not your responsibility to pay for anything. I mean, everything Islamically is his responsibility. Now, that's not to say that I think that, you know, the women shouldn't help, because I think that they should just want to be helpful.
They should want to be helpful, yeah.
Is it our responsibility? No, it's not. It's not at all. And don't ever think that it has to be, because Allah has said that it's not.
But, you know, if you're in the type of relationship where it's like the exchanges happen freely and no one says anything, that's different. Because there's a level of comfort.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just saying, if the man is making you feel like it is your obligation to be contributing to the household, like he's forcing it upon you, like you have to pay rent next month or, you know, whatever. It's like, that's not okay. That's not, Islamically, that's not okay.
Right.
It's not your obligation. But like another example, I mean, financial, I completely agree with you. I also think that from a financial perspective, it's like,
that's the best way to manipulate a woman.
It is.
If they want to manipulate you, that will be their go-to way, is financially. Because, you know, you can argue your way out of certain things. You can do a lot of things. You generally hit a roadblock when it comes to finances. Because what are you going to do If you get financially cut off, what are you going to do?
And not only that, but you know what I think? What I've learned over the years is that people who are financially comfortable are usually very transparent about these things. Like, they're more than happy to tell you, listen, this is how much money I make per year, you know, or this is, you know, I own multiple businesses and this is our average income. If they're financially comfortable, they're usually very transparent. However, if they're not financially comfortable, what I've noticed is like, they'll come up with a lot of excuses like, oh, you know, it's not respectful to ask somebody how much income they make, or you know what, it's like those kinds of excuses, or like, oh, I make enough, you know, or yeah, I'm good, I'm fine, you know what I mean? Like, those kinds of responses usually shows that like, we don't know if we can trust this person, we don't know if we can trust, you know, how financially stable he is. Again, this was just to give you food for thought. This was never to say that you should or shouldn't marry somebody who is financially right. or not financially stable. That's not what I'm saying at all, but it's just to give you some food for thought. I have personally been in the situation where money was being held over me, and it's a really horrible place to be. You feel powerless, and I don't think any woman should be put in that situation. So I'm just trying to protect you ladies. That's all I'm doing.
Right, of course. And let's say you are a woman who does have her own pocketbook and you have ground underneath your own feet. You make your own income. You have your own streams of income. The worst position to be in, he's trying to financially manipulate you by your own money. So, yeah. You yeah. know, let's say he
also, does. I've also been there.
Yeah. So like, let's say he doesn't want you to work and he wants you to rely on him. That is,
or if you're making yeah. no, there's also the possibility that like you're making more money than them, so then they start to put a lot of the financial burdens onto you, like, oh, you make more, so you pay this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's also a red flag if they're insecure if you make more money than them. I'll give you, actually, can I tell a really funny story?
Yeah, go on.
And so you've never heard this story before. I went on a date with a guy several years ago. He was Muslim. And it was 4 or 5 years ago. It was a long time ago. Fresh out of college, you know, I had just graduated. So I went on this date. He told me what he did for a living was flipping houses, and he made a lot of money. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't know too much about it. You know, like, I can't assess anybody's income from flipping at houses if that's not like a, it's not a profession I'm too familiar with. And then, you know, at the time, I was dirt poor. Fresh out of college, you're, you know, odds are stacked against you and you haven't built yourself up yet. I was in my early 20s and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in life. And I told him, these are my ambitions. This is what I want to be. And he seemed a little bit irked by that, right? So I decided, okay, you know what? I'm not interested in this guy. He kind of seems to be like not okay with a woman having a full-on career. You know, life passed by, several years passed by, and now I'm out here in California and I have my own job. I live alone. I have my own finances and my life together. Mm-hmm. And I run into the same guy. This is like in January of this year. And he was like, oh, funny to see you here. I was like, yeah, I live here now. I was like, what are you doing here? And he says to me, oh, I'm just on vacation with my friends. And I was like, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm a data scientist now. He's like, that's so crazy because you said you wanted to be that. You said that to me like 5 or 6 years ago. And here you are exactly that. And I was like, yeah, you know, alhamdulillah, like, you know, I'm in a much better place than when we first had coffee all those years ago. He straight up asked me, he was like, how much money do you make? And I was like, I don't want to tell you. Because why should I tell you? Like, there's no...
Yeah, yeah, you have no reason. Like,
yeah. I have no reason to tell
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So he was like, look, like, I'll be in town. If you still want to catch me later, like, we should meet up. And I politely said no. But it gets weirder. I still run into him later that day.
Oh, strange. You ran into him
at
again.
A coffee shop. Okay. Right. He wasn't stalking me. It was pure coincidence because there's this coffee shop in San Diego called Lestat's. It's very popular. So, you know, it's like a touristy destination. So I wasn't surprised that he was there. So he sat with me for coffee anyways.
So you didn't want the date, but you had the date anyway. Okay.
I didn't want the date, but I had the date anyways. We start talking about careers again. I was like, are you still flipping houses? And he was like, yeah, I love it. And then he asked me the same question again. So like, how much money do you make? I'm like, why are you asking me this question? Like, that's so odd. And then he was like, wait, you said you work for this institution. So technically I have a government job, even though I'm a health employee. So if you don't know this, like, you can search up government jobs and see how much a person makes. And he does it in front of me.
Okay. That's strange.
In front of me.
That's really
weird.
It
was super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm not understanding. Like,
but why is he so concerned about how much you make?
Right. And I thought to myself, the entire time, I'm just thinking to myself, no woman should be in a relationship with you. Because if you're going to go after how much a woman makes and she's not even interested in you, that is such a red flag.
Right.
If I was interested in somebody, I would be forthcoming with my income, but I have no obligation to you if you're just going to... If I'm not interested in you and this is bothering you, it's not necessarily how much I make. Mm-hmm. You're trying to measure my ambition as a woman. Is my ambition as a woman greater than your ambition as a man? Because you see that as something.
Yeah, is it threatening?
As very
you?
Threatening.
Yeah.
He was kind of like double-sided with it. He was like, well, you know, I'm happy for you. You're where you've always wanted to be. And then he was like, so like, you know, when you went on that date with me all those years ago, like what made you, you know, not want to pursue us anymore and stuff like that? And that at that point, when he Googled my salary, I was pissed. So I just said it to him straight up. I was like, the reason why is because I feel like if I was with somebody like you, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Oh, damn. Bitch, slap. No, I'm kidding. What? So what was his response?
He was like, no, like the totally, like, you know, I was like, no, because you just sat here in front of me and searched up my salary.
Right.
And this was such a concern for you that it's, you know, like, if we were actually talking and interested in each other and, you know, this, we're like past the first date, like, let's say we've been dating for a month, then I would have been, okay, let me tell you my salary. But
yeah, exactly. I mean, so, I think it would come up, maybe it could come up organically.
If it came up organically. But the fact that this was such a concern for you is what made me feel a little bit uneasy.
On day one.
Yeah, on day one, this guy did this. Yeah. And so I'm just like sitting there with my jaw dropped. See, it's like these nuances where you have to identify these red flags, right? You have to identify that guy where he's threatened by your ambition outpacing his ambition. You know what I mean? So a lot of dudes, the metric for ambition is income, right? You could be doing something that's far much more ambitious than what he's doing, but if you make less than him, that's his metric for ambition and he won't feel threatened. But the moment that you make more than him is like, I have no idea why that irks a lot of men. But
I mean, yeah. I completely agree with you. I think that that is a huge red flag. But kind of going back on to topic, I'll just give another example because I feel like, you know, finance is a huge example, but I'll just give a second example just for people to have an idea. So another thing that you could potentially, like a detrimental question that you could potentially ask is like, let's say, for example, you know, you don't live close to your parents, right? Let's say your parents live in another state or another country or whatever.
I mean, I don't.
You say...
But go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a common thing. It's not like it's uncommon. Mm-hmm. A question that you could ask is like, so, you know, I plan on, you know, I visit my parents regularly, like twice a year. And I, you know, after we get married, I can, you know, alone, independently. And I plan on continuing to do that even after we get married. Like, you know, what do you think of that? And if their response is, well, you know, I would always want to be with you because, you know, I wouldn't want to be away from you. It's like, okay, that's got controlling written all over it. And in that moment, you'll be feeling like, oh my God, how sweet. Like, he'll want to be with me all the time because he loves me. Okay, that is not something that you say to someone in the initial courting, like initial phases. Like, you don't know this person well enough to be like, I'm going to miss you. Like, that's not the case. So for them to be saying like, oh, I would want us to go together. It means that I have a problem with you traveling alone. I have a problem with you being away from me because I don't know what you're going to be doing. I have a problem with you being with your parents alone because I don't know what they're going to manipulate you into believing against me or whatever. And again, this is something that I personally went through. Specifically this exact scenario, actually, it was like, you know, I visit my mother regularly, and I want to continue that, you know, when we are married. That was the exact response I got was, you know, oh, but, you know, I would miss you, you know, I would want to be with you constantly and blah, blah. So after we get married, do you think he allowed me to visit my mother ever? just out of curiosity.
Do I think he allowed you to visit your mom?
Yeah, by myself.
I feel like no. And you know, to me, that's a huge red flag, because if a guy's afraid of you visiting your own parents, the people who've known you your whole life, I mean, a man has known you for a finite amount of time. He meets you in the middle of your life. And your parents have been there since the day you were born, and he's threatened by them, then that says something about him, not you, because he's afraid they're going to be expressing concern about him to you, and then that'll open your eyes, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. So, you know, my point is that these kinds of questions, when you're asking these kinds of questions, their answers, don't blow them off. Like, you need to be paying attention to the answers they give you, man. It's like with the financial stuff, with this example I just gave, it's like the answers they're giving you, they are your puzzle pieces. They're your puzzle pieces. It's your responsibility to piece together what kind of person this is, right? Whether they're standing in front of you or whether they're behind a screen.
Right.
It's your responsibility, because this doesn't just affect you. This affects the children that you're going to have, every single child that you bring into this world. It affects the relationship that you will have with your siblings and what relationship they will have with your siblings. It affects what relationship you and they will have with your parents after you guys get married. It affects every aspect of your life. So don't take it with a grain of salt. Don't take it lightly. You need to be investigating, like a professional investigator. You know what I mean? Like, you need to take it seriously. And so when you're asking these questions, don't just be
dismissive.
Yeah, don't be dismissive for the way that they're responding. Like, take what they're saying and analyze it. Analyze what they're saying to understand what kind of person they are and what kind of person they will be. Those are like my five things. Those are the five things. But I've got a couple of like tips, like a couple of extra tips that I want to touch on. And one of them is to pay attention to the questions that they're asking you as well. The type of questions that they're asking you can be just as detrimental in regards to you analyzing or understanding them as a person. Are they mainly asking you questions about things that are domestic? Are they mainly asking you questions about things for your work? Are they mainly asking you questions about, you know, your character, your life in general? I mean, these are all things that are going to give you a lot of information about this person, the types of questions that they ask you. If they're not asking you questions, that's also another thing. Sometimes you're talking to somebody and you feel like, I've asked them so many questions and they've told me so much about themselves, but they're not even asking me anything about myself. That's also a huge red flag. It's like they don't care.
They could not be, yeah, they don't care. They could be not interested in you as a person per se.
Right.
They could be interested in something else.
Yeah, they could be interested. They could be interested in just sleeping with you. They could be interested in just the way you look. So it's like, I don't really care about her personality or her character. She's hot, so that's good enough for me. So many things are possible if this person isn't asking you questions that make you feel like you're being heard, like they're getting to know you properly. So another kind of tip that I have is, if you find out that this person has lied to you about anything in your initial phases, because keep in mind that how a relationship starts is a very good indicator of how it's going to be initially. If this person has come to you, whether it's face-to-face or it's behind, you know, it's through social, I mean, virtual means, and they're being transparent, they're telling you everything, they're being open, they're being like an open book, you know, that's amazing. I'm not talking about like them, you know, it's like sometimes you need to warm up to somebody before you start telling them personal things. I'm not saying, oh, they need to tell you their personal story from day one. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if they've told you something and then like a few weeks later, you're like, well, that really contradicts what you said before, and you're catching them in lies, that is a huge red sign. Do not proceed. Like, that is, stop. Like, stop like it while you,
mission.
Yeah, exactly. Abort. Definitely, like, no questions asked, because if this guy can lie to you from day one, from the beginning, then do you think that he's gonna eventually stop lying to you, or do you think that his lies will, over time, he's gonna realize, okay, well, she didn't catch that, like, okay, if I say it this way, she's gonna believe it, you know, and then the lies will eventually start growing and growing and growing. So if he's not being transparent and if you're catching lies early on, believe me, those lies will continue. There's nothing that will stop this person, and you're definitely not the person that's going to make him stop, because he's lying to you, which means that, you know, it's not you. it's you're not the one for him and he's not the one for you.
Right.
Another thing is that I think it's really important to get family involved, family or very close friends. And I mean very close friends because sometimes we have friends that don't have the best intentions for us and we don't even know it. But sometimes you have a friend that you're like, this person is like my sister. I grew up with this person my entire life. Like they're always, you know, they're always doing good things for me. They're always being kind and generous to me. It's like, you know, one of those friends. That's what I'm talking about. But it's like the people who have good intentions towards you, the people that you know you can trust, get those people involved. It's like, let them meet this person because they know you better than anyone else. They've known you for 5, 10, 15, whatever many years, right? 20, 30, I don't know how many years. They are the ones that are going to see, like, your guys' personality is going to work. You guys will be compatible. They can analyze your character and they can analyze this person's character and they can assess whether this is going to work or not, whether it's going to be compatible. And I know that sometimes people are afraid to like, oh, I don't know. What if this person tells me they're not the right one or blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I have to start over. It's like this person has your best interest at heart. So it's probably best for you to start over if they think that you should start over as opposed to you pursuing it. And then you're divorced 5 years later with two kids. And, you know, that's not a good situation to be in because obviously it's very difficult, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I think it's important. So another tip is to get family and friends involved that you right. trust. Right. And then additionally, my last one, and you kind of touched on this mm-hmm. earlier. It's important to stay engaged for a reasonable amount of time. 3 months is not enough. I'll tell you that from personal experience. Now, obviously, there are situations where, you know, the marriage is arranged. But just because the marriage is arranged, just because, you know, you want to follow, you know, very strict kind of Islamic way or whatever, and you aren't going to be meeting this person face to face before you marry them or whatever the situation is, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't, you know, talk to, if you're engaged to this person, if your family has arranged an engagement, I think you have every right to be asking to speak with this person on the phone if they're not okay with you guys ever meeting until you're married or whatever. So it's like, give yourself enough time for that engagement to be long enough for you to be able to see these qualities. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. When they kind of let their guard down and they're more comfortable.
Exactly. And if that takes 6 months, okay, if it takes a year, dude, I'm telling you, it's worth waiting because I know that we can be very impatient, but waiting an extra 6 months, if that saves you from getting divorced down the line, then it's well worth it.
Truer words have never been spoken. You said a lot of things there. One of the things that I kind of picked up on is when you asked me that question, like, you know, when they cut you off from their family or, you know, your mom or what have you. I find it really odd where that type of audacity comes from. If I were to think to myself that I'm going to cut my husband off from his family and I'm going to fill horrible words about his mother or his father in his heads, he's known his parents his whole life. What the hell do I know about them?
Of course, I completely agree with you. But unfortunately, there are people out there in this world that they think they have the right to be talking shit about people's parents to them. I mean, it just boils down to people being good and having a good heart and people being bad and having a bad heart. Or selfish. I don't know about bad. I can't say anyone's good or bad. Selfish. Selfish and rude.
Right, I agree, but I just think to myself where the audacity comes from, because, you know, there it's one thing to, like, let's say their parents did do something wrong. You can objectively and in a very lovingly way talk about that. What's not okay is like, well, you know, your mom's a bitch, so I don't want to meet with her. Like, you know, I don't get that. Like, oh, your mom's, you know, an instigator.
Honestly, this, like, boils down to how they treat their own mother. I mean, it's how they treat their own mother is a very good indication of how they're going to treat your mother, too, to be honest with you. I mean, I should have seen it. Red flags fucking everywhere. I'm an idiot. But no, I can't even say that. Alhamdulillah. I had done istihara on that marriage and Allah showed me that he was the right person to marry. And I know why. I mean, in hindsight, I know exactly why he needed to come into my life. There are multiple things that happened throughout our marriage. There were multiple things that I learned, lessons that I learned, things that I gained. I can't say that it was a mistake because it was written for me and it was what Allah decided to put into my life for, you know, for multiple reasons. Right. So alhamdulillah, that's all I can say. But my point is that if these are things that I wish somebody had told me while I was in that you know, stage of searching for somebody. For me, because last week we were talking about, okay, what do we want to do next week on next week's episode? And I had mentioned to Afroz, this is something that is important to me to share. And actually, this was something that I wanted to do kind of earlier. But my point is that it's like, this is something that is important for me to share, because if this helps even just one person, if one thing that I said helps even just one person in whatever situation that they're in and protects them from getting with somebody who's going to be, you know, treating them wrong, disrespectful to them, making them cry, making them miserable, you know, disrespecting them, whatever, then honestly, that's all that matters to me. If I saved one person from having to go through that, then that is all that matters.
I mean, first of all, thank you so much for even sharing your personal experiences, not with just me, but just with the listeners in general, because oftentimes having firsthand accounts of something is the best source of knowledge. So I just want to thank you for that.
Of course.
I feel like this entire episode was Dua's words of wisdom, so I don't know if you have any closing out words of wisdom.
I think, honestly, just don't be so naive. That's my words. When it comes to men, women, when it comes to men, comma, women, ladies, don't.
Men come first, then the comma, okay?
Yeah. When it comes to guys, right, we need to be, we can't be so naive. We can't be so, a lot of the times is that women are naive for love. It's not even about the guy, man. It's like we're loving creatures and we want to be loved.
You're in love with the idea. You're not in love with the guy.
Exactly. That's so, you know, the first time I heard that was when I was in high school, and the girl, a friend of mine, she had just broken up with her boyfriend. Actually, I think he broke up with her. I don't know. Anyway, they had just broken up, and they were like the hit couple of like the school, you know? I remember I was having a conversation with him. I was like, do you miss him? And because everybody was talking about it, like it was crazy. It was just like everywhere. They had dated for like 3 years or whatever. And she said to me, she's like, you know what, I don't miss him, but I miss the idea of him, like the idea of having a boyfriend, the idea of having somebody around, the idea of having someone to talk to. And that's true. That is so true. It's like we as women, we love the idea of love, and we crave the idea of love. We crave the idea of somebody loving us and giving us what we want. But it's important not to allow that to blind you and to hinder you from making well-educated decisions, I guess, on finding.
You want to thrive, and you want to be, you know, introspective and retrospective and make good decisions.
Don't allow love to blind you.
Right. Don't dismiss those red flags, like trust that gut feeling that you have, that you may be ignoring.
Exactly. So my last thing that I'm going to say is that same quote I said earlier. It was something I read. The things that you have, the things that are bothering you in the beginning are the same. If you ignore them, they're the same things that are going to be the reason why you get divorced. Keep that in mind and remember that for when you're trying to find Mr. Right.
Sounds good.
I hope that everyone, by the grace of Allah, we're able to find the right men for us. We're able to find men that are kind and giving and caring and loving and that treat us and treat our children.
And may we raise them as well.
I mean.
Next week, we'll be talking about cosmetic surgery and how the beauty industry targets or preys on the self-confidence and self-esteem of women.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that all of you out there stay happy and healthy.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.